If you like Ann Arbor Stories, the podcast, you'll love Ann Arbor Stories, the live experience. Rich, Brian, and the Ann Arbor Stories crew will be performing a live tale at Nerd Night Ann Arbor on Thursday, February 16th at 7 p.m. at Live, located at 102 South First Street. Doors open at 6:30, it's free, and we'll be on a bill featuring two other great presentations from interesting people. Learn more at annarbor.nerdnight.com. And if you like our podcast and you haven't already done so, please go to iTunes and rate us so more great people like you can enjoy these stories from Ann Arbor's past and not so distant past. It only takes a minute, but it helps a lot. On to the show. This is Ann Arbor Stories. I'm Rich Reddy. Police spotted the Nazis in their rented U-Haul at the edge of the city around 11 a.m., 2 hours before anyone expected them to arrive. 15 members of the alt-right, I mean Nazi SS Action Group out of Westland, sitting cheek to cheek to cheek in the front and 12 in the back, butts and shields and jackboots bouncing over every pothole. The previously issued statement announced their intention to rally at Ann Arbor City Hall at 1 p.m. on March 20th, 1982. A rally to speak out against the growing threat of communism in the country and give Ann Arborites a SWOT analysis of white power. The city was ready. Two counter-demonstrations were planned for the day. The polite and respectful one, organized by the Committee on the Affirmation of Human Dignity and Freedom and supported by the Jewish Community Council and the Interfaith Council for Peace. This rally about peace and acceptance and dignity was set for 1 p.m. at the Federal Building on Liberty Street. The other gathering had a slightly less turn-the-other-cheek vibe. It was organized by the very vocal and less bureaucratic than it sounds Committee to Stop the Nazis. This group planned to start demonstrating at noon at City Hall and include all the trappings of a good anti-Nazi demonstration. Speakers and chanting and music to whip the crowd into a frenzy of force by 1 p.m. to welcome those Nazi visitors to our fair city. The Ann Arbor News tried its best to soothe a predictably nervous city, which feared an unknown number of Nazis goose-stepping down Huron, but also the potential for massive riots. The news wrote several articles with the prevailing sentiment captured in this headline. Let Nazis march in splendid misery. Quote, let the neo-Nazis march. Let them holler and chant and let them make fools of themselves. They'll tire of it soon enough. When they don't draw a crowd or provoke a response, they'll quit. They'll go back to whatever rock they crawled out from. From Captain America to Indiana Jones, America has a long and proud history of punching Nazis in the face. The news had its work cut out for it. The Nazi U-Haul drove past City Hall 2 hours earlier than anyone expected, and 1 hour before the Committee to Stop the Nazis were ready to start their demonstration. Regardless, a sizable crowd was already gathered in front of City Hall, tailgating and prepping for the fun to be had, so the Nazi wheelman opted to hang a left and cruise past the Federal Building to scope things out. With a more manageable and docile-looking crowd on hand, the Nazis opted to park and change their rally point on the fly. One by one, 14 neo-Nazis climbed out of the U-Haul, stretched their legs in the parking lot, and smoothed their clothes. The driver stayed behind in the getaway vehicle. Most wore full black uniforms tucked into scuffed black jackboots. A few wore fatigues and sneakers, more practical battle attire. They walked down the city sidewalk on this Saturday afternoon just after lunch, visors on their black motorcycle helmets partially obscuring baby faces beneath. Most were teenagers, a few reported to be as young as 15. They still looked intimidating. Knuckles white around the handles of mean-looking shields fashioned out of old stop signs, painted to display giant white swastikas. In the opposite hand, they gripped long black clubs. Some carried signs on white poster boards stenciled in spray paint. Reds, get out of Central America, and smash red treason. When the Nazis rounded the corner of the Federal Building, they surprised the 100 or so people setting up for their peaceful 1 p.m. rally, still an hour away. The Nazis didn't waste much time. They gathered right in front of the building, and a spokesperson took charge. He began a long and difficult to understand speech about the evils of communism, his voice cutting in and out thanks to a defective bullhorn pressed to his lips. His words bounced off the buildings across the street and quickly spread to the demonstrators at City Hall. The Nazis were in town. Their own rally had just begun, and one by one, then 10 by 10, then 50 by 50, then 100 by 100, the estimated crowd of 2,000 anti-Nazi demonstrators thundered the two blocks towards the federal building, arriving at speed. The crowd swelled, their voices shouting down the Nazis and his defective bullhorn. Chants of "Go home" and "Eat shit" rose in volume and fervor. Police were scattered amongst the crowd, pulling riot helmets over their ears and holding batons and shields of their own to protect the Nazis and control the crowd. But the constabulary were vastly outnumbered. Someone got the idea to throw a snowball at the Nazis. Someone else brought tomatoes. Those who forgot to pack projectiles picked up rocks. Some chose bricks. The Nazis held up their shields, the sound of rocks and wet fruit mixed with all the yelling, and backed up against the plate glass doors of the locked federal building. Cornered and trapped, as the crowd advanced, skirmishes broke out on the front lines. Clubs swung and fists were thrown. Police tried to push through the crowd, but organization was nearly impossible. It looked bad for a minute, and the Nazis might have been boot stomped to mush, but for one woman in the crowd, who picked up a brick and threw it at the bad guys. It missed, but smashed the plate glass door behind the Nazis, offering a viable escape route. The Nazis' natural instinct was to retreat into the now accessible building, but that's when things got really scary. An armed guard inside the building stepped forward, wearing giant sunglasses and holding a big black revolver. He leveled the gun at the frantic Nazis and told them in no uncertain terms that the building was closed. The Nazis freaked out, caught between a gun and 2,000 angry Ann Arborites. Fortunately for them, the crowd also saw the revolver. Someone yelled "gun," and anyone in earshot panicked, ducking and diving to seek cover. The police took advantage, 45 cops rushing forward with batons and shields upraised to protect the shell-shocked Nazis and calm the shaken federal building employee. The police formed a protective corridor and hustled the Nazis along the face of the federal building to safety, their shields deflecting most of the missiles. They arrived at the parking lot where the U-Haul was parked, and it was gone. The driver ordered by the guards at the federal building to move the vehicle some time ago. The police formed a phalanx, hunkered down, and radioed for a sheriff's department bus, which arrived 10 very long and very tense minutes later. Heads down, the Nazis loaded in, pressing their shields against the bus windows as rocks and bricks broke the glass. They drove to sheriff's department headquarters on Hogback Road, where the Nazis were reunited with their U-Haul and escorted out of town. The Nazi leader, Ted Dunn, blamed the near riot on Ann Arbor's communist element and reported that his men suffered nothing more than scrapes and bruises in the fracas. Quote, "I didn't even get a chance to swat one of those Reds, even though I wanted to." Dunn claimed the event was a success, crediting it with delivering him a new recruit, one who was, quote, "young, single, and white." "Maybe we'll make this a yearly event, like Hash Bash or May Day," Dunn said. Title card. 1 year later, March 20th, 1983. All right, Ann Arbor, let's do it right this time. 1 year to the day, Ann Arbor News columnist Don Faber appealed to the city's fairer nature as the media tried once again to get the populace to ignore the incoming Nazi visitors. Quote, "Let them holler and chant and make bloody fools of themselves. When they're tired of it and find they aren't drawing a response, they'll go back to whatever rock they crawled out from." In anticipation of this return visit, local police spent $27,000 on baton training and gas masks, along with $14,535 of earmarked funds to pay for police overtime. Many of the same 15 neo-Nazis who visited the year before arrived at the northeast edge of town around 11:30 a.m., driving several cars and a battered, windowless rental truck. They announced plans for a rally at noon at City Hall to celebrate, among other things, the 50th anniversary of Adolf Hitler's rise to power. Police cruisers met the Nazis at the edge of town and escorted them to the Ann Arbor News parking lot off Ann Street, where they parked. The Nazis, once again clad in black uniforms and fatigues, carrying shields and clubs and signs, headed to City Hall, facing a crowd of hundreds of counter-demonstrators, who caught sight of them pretty soon after they got out of their vehicles, and rushed the Nazis, throwing rocks and batteries and baby jars full of ammonia. The police formed a protective shield once again and hustled the Nazis back to their vehicles and escorted them out of town. The crowd cheered in the street. This time, the Nazis had boots on the ground for at most 6 minutes. Surely they would never come again. Title card, 1 year later, March 17th, 1984. If at first you don't succeed, try again. Same black riot helmets, same black uniforms, same fatigues, long black clubs with grip tape on the handle, those stop sign shields with big white swastikas on the face. It was a cold Saturday, and the Nazis were 2 hours late. It wasn't their fault. Overnight, parked on a street in Dearborn, all four tires on their van had been slashed and their motor damaged. Plus, they took a wrong turn. But here they were at 3 p.m. in front of the federal building again, most of the protesters who had gathered 2 hours earlier to meet them long gone. Still, a crowd of 75 or so were on hand to listen to SS Action Group spokesman John Reich educate them on the communist conspiracy. This time only 11 Nazis made the trip, no bullhorn, no giant anti-demonstration plan to shout them down. Their uniforms looked a lot shabbier than in the past years. Reich spoke for a minute or so before a man bolted through the line of reporters screaming, "You're a goddamn killer," and tackled Reich to the ground. The crowd, frenzied by the attack, jumped the 10 remaining neo-Nazis as police tried to step in between the groups. Batons and fists clashed again. A counter-demonstrator smashed Ann Arbor Police Detective Richard Anderson above the right eye, opening a nasty gash. Patrolman Craig Mason was hit in the head by something. Bruises were traded by each side. Police arrested the man who jumped Reich and four other demonstrators, while the disoriented Nazis huddled behind the police for a third time in 3 years. Not knowing where the Nazi van was parked, police led the cowering crew to a sheriff's department bus nearby. The Nazis were hustled on board by the cops, and in a cruel twist of logistics, the arrested counter-demonstrators were also led onto the bus. An attorney on scene vehemently argued with police, and, after being warned that if he charged the police lines again, he'd be arrested, he did and was. Officers kept the group separated on the bus until it arrived at sheriff's headquarters on Hogback, where the arrested were led into the building and the Nazis were escorted to their van. Title card. Just kidding. The Nazis didn't come back a fourth time. Not formally, like they had the march before. Ted Dunn and John Reich and their black uniform fascists didn't disappear, but they stopped thinking they could rally in Ann Arbor without some kind of consequence. Captain America, Indiana Jones, and Ann Arbor, upholding the proud American tradition of punching Nazis in the face. Ann Arbor Stories is presented by Rumble Pack Media in partnership with the Ann Arbor District Library. This episode was written and read by me, Rich Reddy, with recording and sound production by Brian Peters. Thanks, as always, to the Ann Arbor District Library and their archive staff, who diligently help us research these stories and provide story ideas that they think you'll all love. Please follow us on Twitter and now Instagram at Ann Arbor Stories, or drop us a line at annarborstories@gmail.com. Thank you for your support.